welcome back to Hero Hype. It's episode 45, and while a couple of our shows are off this week, we do have a significant amount to talk about, thanks to one little development on one little show called Arrow. So, as always, I'm Donya, and I'm joined by my co-host, Caitlin.
And I'm sick. Sorry.
She doesn't sound as bad as she thinks she does, so... as always, if you guys want to get hold of us at all, you can do so by contacting us on Twitter, which is at Hero Hype Podcast. You can leave a comment on this post when it goes up on Hypeable.com, or you can send us an email, which is HeroHypePodcast@gmail.com. So I'm going to take a little bit of a break from Brief History and Comic Corner. I've had a bit of a crazy week all in, so haven't had the time that I would have liked to sit down and really go through everything that I would want to give you the best Brief History and the best Comic Corner that I can. But I will recommend picking up the Poe Dameron comic.
You would.
It was actually pretty good. The only thing I'll say about it really, really quickly, writing, excellent. Art is phenomenal, but a little stiff, but I hope it kind of picks up a little bit as it goes. You picked up a comic this week, though, didn't you? You picked up the Bombshells trade.
I did. I haven't read it yet, though.
Yeah, that's another one. Go pick that up now that the trades are coming out. So, and the trades being the collected version of all the little single issues. So if you don't want lots and lots of little comics lying around everywhere, you can pick up the trades, which are the thicker books that collect everything into one big handy book that will sit on your bookshelf and look really nice. So, we'll get into our TV headlines then to start. And first things first, I know we don't talk about the show on the podcast, but if anyone has been watching Lucifer, it got renewed by Fox for season 2. And do I get to do my happy dance? Because finally, an occult DC show that has not been cancelled.
Danya's very happy about
Hallelujah!
Which is ironic to say for Lucifer.
Yeah. Oh, he'd probably be like, you're ruining a perfectly good moment. But it's renewed, so if you haven't picked it up, give it a shot. It's only going to be 13 episodes long for its first season, intended to have short seasons, which I do actually hope they continue going into season 2, because honestly, once it got past the first couple of episodes of, like, slowly doing the case of the week sort of thing, just to give you the feel of the characters and who they are and what their motivations are, it really picked up the sort of overarching storyline and just was like, cool, yeah, now that you know all the characters, we're gonna run with this. And it was like, wow, okay. And there hasn't really been enough time for filler episodes, so the shortest series is really working out in its favor so far. And
that's,
yeah,
probably true of most shows. I think a lot of shows would benefit from going shorter.
Do you know, it's a very American thing. We don't get really long series. Like, if you watch British shows, you'll notice that a series typically runs anywhere between 6 episodes to, on average, 12. And that's, I don't know if that's for budget reasons, or, I mean, look at The Night Manager, which just finished airing over here. That was only a few episodes, and yeah, it's, we don't really do long series over here, to be honest. So
we're starting to see a few more shows that go shorter, like Lucifer, and the CW has, like, Legends and The 100 are shorter seasons.
Yeah, and I like that. It also means that it's a lot easier to keep up with everything when you don't when you're not, like, staring down the barrel of 20 odd episodes all the time.
So. And it just helps with story, because there's just less room to go off on tangents and need filler.
Yeah. Exactly. So, if you haven't picked up Lucifer, do, because we are getting another show to add to our roster of very, very many superhero-based shows. So, Marvel's Cloak and Dagger is heading to Freeform, which is the stupidest name still is formerly ABC Family. yeah. I don't know. But I'm really excited about this one because, as you guys may have heard me screaming on and on and on about Runaways all the time, Cloak and Dagger actually get involved with the Runaways at one point during their storyline. So if they're picking up these characters and the Runaway script is still on the table, as they keep saying, we may get that eventually. But it's going to be this little kind of live-action romance kind of show, which is a little bit different for them, and also different from the comic book, because while there are some romantic undertones to their partnership, they don't actually get romantically involved. So yeah, basically what happens is they're runaways, they end up in New York, they end up getting tangled up with Spider-Man, they get sort of abducted by this kind of doctor who's developing a new drug called D-Light, which is supposed to, like, take over the market from heroin. And what it does is that it kind of creates in them, like mutant abilities. So they're not classed as mutants in the comics. They're classed as mutates because they weren't born with their mutation. It was kind of created in them. But anyway, what happens is that Tandy, who is Dagger, can emit light daggers, and Tyrone, who is Cloak, can engulf himself and others in darkness and basically can, like, lose them. It's like this big kind of black hole almost. Now, the reason that they're so closely linked to each other is that Cloak's powers need constant, like, feeding, like, energy to feed it. Otherwise, it goes very, very dark, as in off the rails, dark, crazy. So Tandy, using her light powers, can sustain him, so they can't really be apart from each other. So they are, for all intents and purposes, connected in that respect. So it's an interesting thing to pick up for a TV series. They're not major characters either. They're almost like, you know, you've got, like, your A-list of Marvel characters, your B-list. They're probably C-list Marvel characters. Not a lot of people are probably going to be familiar with them. So, are you excited for this?
I don't know if I'd use the word excited and say curious, just based on the network. They are not the highest quality of shows that they put out. So that makes me a little nervous, but the concept is interesting.
I can't remember what channel Gallivant was on. That's just ABC, isn't it? Yeah, so yeah. I was going to be like, but Gallivant was... No, that was ABC, not ABC Family.
ABC Family, like, Pretty Little Liars, and they're doing Shadowhunters, which has been very mixed in how people are reacting to it.
So, I don't watch either of those shows, so I personally can't attest for the quality, but I'm kind of excited to see them coming to TV. So,
well, on the DC side, we got some good news from Arrow, which is a positive turn of events. For season 5, we found out that Echo Kellum, who plays Curtis Holt, will be a series regular.
Yay!
Which I am very excited about, and I'm hoping that this means we're gonna see him become Mr. Terrific.
That would be terrific.
Ha ha ha.
It would be, though. It'd be nice to see him sort of take up the mantle, maybe. I don't even necessarily think he needs to work directly with Team Arrow, necessarily, because I don't know. It would be nice to see him doing more, though. So, series regular, 2 huge thumbs up for that news.
And it's more representation, because Curtis is both Black and gay, so we like that.
What does it mean we're gonna see more of his husband as well?
I hope
so. I really
so.
Love his husband.
I love their relationship. They're adorable.
They really are. I think
so. I'm totally here for that.
Yes. Me too. So that's it for news. A lot of the rest of the stuff that we got was mostly interviews and reactions from the fallout of Arrow from this week, but we figured we'd leave it for the actual Arrow discussion. So, do we want to start off with S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Just
to get it out of the way. So, this week, interestingly, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. played with the idea that, if you remember from a couple of weeks ago, I mentioned Civil War was coming back to the comics again, and they were going to play with the idea of an Inhuman or a powered person who can see the future or see future events or future criminals or crimes. And the Civil War that's coming to the comics is going to be split over people who want to use that to stop people before they can do these terrible things. And then the people who are like, no, you can't give someone punishment before the crime. So this week's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of played with that a little bit, in that we got an Inhuman who, when he touches people, they see flashes of their own future. He also sees this future as well. And yeah, it was I kind of really like the way that they kind of jumped around in the timeline, and you had like the people like Fitz and Simmons and everyone being like, well, you know, science, you can't actually change the future. It's a set point. If it is possible to see how things are going to play out, you can't change it. So you had people in that camp, and then you had people in the other camp being like, no, we're going to change the future. We're going to save the world. We're going to do everything and save it, and it'll be great, and everything's going to work out fantastically, you know, the way that it always does on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But did you like how they kind of played around with the timeline here, with, like, seeing flashes back and forth of what was coming up? I thought the editing, personally, was really, really well done.
Yeah, I thought the editing was good. I'm sort of bored of this trope. Like, I've seen it in pretty much, like, every show with a sci-fi bent ever, so it gets a little tiring, and they usually seem to all end up in the same place, that it's kind of inevitable. And the more you work to stop whatever you think is going to happen, the more that actually is what makes it happen. And that just sort of gets boring legends. To watch.
Yeah, I was just thinking, yeah, that's kind of the basis of Legends and Legends. Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. I thought it was just really interesting, because obviously we see another flash again of that scene that we got at the start of this part of this half of the season, where someone was floating around in space and there's blood, and it's like, oh, what the F is going on? And we see that again when Charles, after everything goes down in the building, as was predicted in his vision of Daisy's future, she sees that moment in space that we got from, it was the mid-season premiere, wasn't it? It was. I'm pretty sure it was.
I don't remember seeing this shot before.
You don't? I'm pretty sure it was the mid-season premiere where we kind of got it and someone was floating around, and then it kind of just jumped straight into the rest of the episode.
I don't remember that.
Oh, and it kind of...
You know me and my memory with S.H.I.E.L.D. It's pretty much non-existent.
Yeah. But now is the interesting question of, that's the second time we've now seen that scene. We have got almost undeniable proof in front of us that no matter what, this is going to play out in this exact way. Like, there's no changing the future. Do you think it really is set in stone, or do you think they'll be able to change that outcome in space? Because obviously someone is pretty seriously hurt, there's a lot of blood. But, do you think it's set in stone? Do you think they can change that? Or the outcome of it?
Well, I think the key thing we learned from this episode is that things aren't often what we expect them to be, so we might get a look at something that's going on, and then when we get the context, it's completely different, which is kind of what everyone was running into, like thinking that Fitzsimmons were standing in the snow and it was actually Ash and all that kinds of stuff. So I have a feeling that we'll get this and then it'll be completely different than what we initially thought it was going to be.
Yeah, we know definitively that Daisy is the one in space. So we know that she's got to be somewhere in that vicinity because she's seeing flashes of an event that she's involved in. So she's got to be in space or very directly linked with that. But I wonder who else is up there with her. Because, you know, the obvious thing would be Fitz or Simmons or both of them. It's going to be one of those things that they may tease out slowly now as we kind of get towards the finale.
And it's going to be completely not what we think.
Yeah.
That's just what I took from this whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing now is that they all know that Ward is back. So that was...
quote, unquote.
Yeah, quote, unquote. They think it's Ward. They
well,
don't...
not really.
Well, Fitz doesn't think it's Ward. He was basically like, he was like, whatever that is, kind of thing. But that's going to be quite interesting. Like, now that they're aware that that's a chess piece back on the board again, how it continues to play out, because the other thing that we see is the Inhumans throughout this episode, or at least Lincoln, Andrew / Lash, and Guerra, basically being like, there's a greater purpose here, there's something more that we are kind of meant for. So, Lincoln basically being like, Inhumans come about when their powers are required. So, it's not random, it's whatever manifests in them through Terrigenesis is something that is needed at that point. Andrew and Lash being like, I feel like there's something else going on here. Like, I've got this feeling somewhere inside me that there's something greater happening that Lash knows and I don't. And then you've got Guerra, who's basically alongside Unward, kind of being like, they're working towards a greater goal, because he obviously tells Malik to to F off in gentler terms. So there's something bigger unfolding here with the Inhumans than we're privy to. Because someone, I can't remember exactly who, I remember putting the comment into the doc. Someone said, well, if Inhumans are created to fill a need within this universe, then what was the need for Lash? And I get the feeling that now that the Inhuman vaccine has failed to make him Andrew again and remove the Inhuman DNA from him, that we may start seeing a ramp up of that playing out.
I have to wonder if Lash is a response to Hive too.
Yeah, I mean, Hive is basically, as we see in the boardroom when they go to get the tech, that he's still, like, just sustaining himself by absorbing people, like, literally killing them and going all... it's like that Indiana Jones temple. Raiders of the Lost Ark thing, where it basically is like, face melting off and dying kind of thing. But, yeah. So he's using all of that to sustain himself, but he says specifically, what do we do with when S.H.I.E.L.D. comes? Do we kill everyone? And Hive goes, only the humans, or not the Inhumans. I can't remember the exact quote, but he says one of those. So he needs Inhumans for something. So is Lash exterminating them so that Hive can't use them?
Or is he there to eventually take Hive out?
Yeah, there is also that. There's so many, right, there's so many pieces that we've got and we're aware of, but we don't have everything in the right order in order to connect it all together. But I feel like it's, like, right there that we can figure out what's going on. We just need a couple more clues. But, it was such a good... I really enjoyed this episode, though. And the kind of, the sort of jumping around and it all building up to that bit at the end. I thought it was still quite tense, but all in all, it was a pretty enjoyable episode for me.
I think the fact that I was watching while I was pretty much the worst of my sickness kind of skewed how I was interested, and my interest level was minimal, mostly just because I didn't feel good. So I have a cynical response to the whole thing.
Well, I thought it was good. Do you have anything else from this episode that you want to add?
I guess I'm just sad that they had the whole vaccine and then it didn't work for Andrew.
Well, there is also the fact that as we know it right now, it hasn't worked immediately. Could it potentially work over a smaller amount of time?
I just don't know why else you bring it up unless it's gonna impact him in some way.
Yeah. And it wasn't drawn out enough that it gave him hope that it was, like, an extended amount of hope that it could work. We would know within the space of, like, a few minutes whether or not it did or not. And we know that this is a prototype vaccine. It isn't completely finished. But could it be that it might just work over time? It might break it down over the time. What if Lash's purpose is, as you said, to go up against Hive, and when that happens, maybe his powers start reverting because the vaccine actually starts being effective? It just takes a longer amount of time when it's this far into the inhuman process with Terrigenesis.
Who knows? I just know that that vaccine is going to come back at some point.
Yeah.
With Andrew/Lash, because why else talk about it?
Yeah, there was the little bit with Charles and Daisy when Charles was dying and he was like, I just wanted to protect my daughter, just make sure that she stays safe, protect my daughter. Because he's terrified that, like, what's happening to him will happen to her. And I think this might be one of the first times that Daisy might have seen what a huge burden inhuman powers can be on someone, to the point that his powers literally destroyed his life. He couldn't hold his child. He couldn't touch anyone. He ran away from home. He became homeless. And then he eventually died saving her. So maybe the vaccine is going to be used in that respect. She might become slightly more open to using it. I don't know. Nothing else?
No, not really.
Okay. Well, then, I guess let's just get it over with. Let's move on to Arrow. Let's do it.
Okay. So, obviously, the thing to talk about is the fact that Laurel died. And she didn't just die. It happened in a really cruel way, I will say, that not only was she was Damian Dark stabs her because he had threatened her life to make sure that Quentin followed his orders, and so he was following through on that. So her death wasn't even about her, which has been a pattern of the death of women in this show. She then goes into surgery and comes out, and the doctor's like, she's going to be fine. And then she shares a moment with everybody and asks Oliver to make a promise to her that we'll apparently find out about in season 5. And then she goes into cardiac arrest and dies before Quentin ever gets there. It's unnecessary and it's cruel. And I'm not necessarily opposed to a female character being killed, but when you have the context of everything that's been going on in this show, this was a little much. Like, at least make her death about her being a threat as the district attorney, or because she was offered the job as district attorney. Make it about the fact that she's the only one willing to prosecute the case. Something. Make it about her and not about causing a man pain, because this is the second time I feel like we've had a male character kill a female and say, this is causing a man pain. Die. And that's just, that's not okay.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. I'm on the same page as you with this. I'm not necessarily opposed to Laurel dying as, like, a story moment. I think that, in one respect, it's a very bold move to make, particularly because of her comic book origins and how incredibly important the Black Canary is to the Arrow mythos. Like, it's such a bold move for them to separate themselves that much from the comics and being like, we're a completely different entity. We may have familiar moments and familiar things, but we're completely separate to that. And, you know, I can respect that on one level. I can commend that as a bold story choice, because the Black Canary is such a huge part of the Arrow story that doing something like that, it takes guts, because as someone who absolutely loves the Black Canary and Arrow storyline in the comics, you know, it was something that I might have expected to see on the show, and it didn't work out like that, and I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. It's just different, but actually removing her from the game entirely, that's a whole other ballgame. What I didn't like is, like you, this death wasn't about her. And if we hadn't had stuff like Slade killing Moira to cause Oliver pain, if we hadn't had Malcolm killing Sarah in order to further his storyline, in order to give himself an advantage and get himself out of the shit, basically. If we hadn't had, like, I don't know, it just, all of these deaths leading up to this have never been about the people themselves. It's always been about what it's going to do for Oliver or for Malcolm or for Lance. And if this had been isolated, I could have probably gone with it a little bit more. Because, you know, Damien Dark did make that promise to Quentin. That is something that he said, you know, he would be like, I will take out your family. What's left of it, I will take it out and cause you unbelievable pain if you betray me. Like, that's how Damien Dark works. Fine. But this is just another in a long line of a pattern. And that's what it is, a pattern. Laurel deserved more than a death just to hurt Oliver and her father. She deserved to, and I'm not saying she didn't die a hero, they went in to basically save everyone, but she deserved it at least to be about her. She deserved the end of her storyline to be, like you said, because she was a threat rather than because it would, what it would do to Oliver and what it would do to the team and whatever. Because even her dying breaths weren't about her. They were her basically being like, you are the love of my life, which also don't buy because Tommy and all of season two. I mean, come on. She went into a spiral of grief over Tommy's death. Like, that was the whole season two storyline for her, was her trying to deal with her grief through her alcoholism. Like, we're not even, right, we're not going there right now, okay? But she says, you were the love of my life, but go, be with Felicity. She's good for you. Go do that. That is cruel. Yeah. That's so unnecessary. Because whatever you think of Oliver and Felicity of a couple, it doesn't matter. you can love them, you can hate them, whatever. But if you're removing a character as huge and affecting as Laurel and the Black Canary from the storyline, knowing how beloved she is from the comics and how much fan opinion of her has turned around since season one, season two, when she started getting her own storylines and her own things to do and everything aside from the other characters. Like, at this point in the storyline, like, that's spitting on the fans who may have a connection back to the comics still and may have been holding out for something between Oliver and Laurel, or people who still love that relationship from the comics. That's basically... I don't care that in interviews they said that, you know, it wasn't about that. That just felt spiteful to me. Like, it felt like, these are the toys that you get to play with and we're taking this one away. And it just made me feel uncomfortable. Because I was like, you didn't need it. You didn't need to have that there. You didn't need to reaffirm that Laurel supports Oliver and Felicity as a couple with her dying breaths, and then, like, dying. She's now permanently removed from ever being a possibility for love for Oliver. And it frustrates the hell out of me.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I do like Oliver and Felicity as a couple, but I like Laurel as a character and am bothered by that as kind of one of the last things she says. Like, I kind of can see it to be like, I'm okay with this, but that really doesn't need to be the last thing, one of the last things she says. Like, we have seen through her actions since they got together that she supports them as a couple. So there's no reason for that. And that bothers me as well. I didn't like that. Though, what do you think the promise was she asked Oliver to make?
I don't actually know. I mean, if we're not going to find out till season 5, like, what could be so big, so huge, that she needed to tell him something that was that important that she may never be able to tell someone again? Like, I don't know.
Because if it was something like, promise to look after my father or something, like, why does that need to be off screen?
Yeah, it doesn't. That doesn't need to be done, but I don't know.
And I mean, could it be something related to Sarah? I don't know. It's confusing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just, I'm unhappy about this. And I think something I wrote about my recap, and my recap was super negative, and I'm not going to apologize for that, but that was kind of bringing up the other women who have died, like Moira. At least when Moira died, she was being killed to cause pain to to Oliver and Thea, but I feel like her character arc had kind of come full circle. She had really done what she needed to do as a character. So it felt less jarring to me. Like, it was sad, but I don't necessarily feel like we missed all that much that she could provide to the story after her death. While Laurel had only just become a full-fledged Black Canary, we saw in her fight with those League of Assassin loyalists to Malcolm that she has really become a formidable fighter in her own right. She has finally become the Black Canary, and she's really dealing with everything in her life, and I would have even been okay with her, like, hanging the mask up and becoming the DA, because, like, we've talked about, and Oliver kind of says, you know, you don't need a mask to be a hero. She would have been helping them significantly by working as the district attorney. So I wouldn't have had a problem with that either. So I feel like there were a lot of ways that character still could have had plenty of work to do, essentially, in the story. So that it just feels like we're losing a lot of potential for that character. And I think that's disappointing. But also what bothers me so much is that in the interviews after when the producers were basically like justifying why they killed Laurel, they were like, oh, we didn't want to kill her, but we had to pay off the grave. Well, that bothers me so much. Laurel dying is literally the payoff of a gimmick that they did in the first episode that they didn't even know who was in the grave in the first place. If they had said, okay, we're killing Laurel this season for the shock or to shake things up. Okay, I can get on board with that if that is the way you are going. But because they had no idea who they were killing and the actors didn't know, and I think Katie Cassidy said she didn't find out until like two episodes before or something. Like, that's ridiculous. So the fact like this was not a plan. It was just a reaction to a gimmick that they set up. And that shows a total lack of planning and is sort of symptomatic of the last two seasons of Arrow that has really been suffering from story issues. And I'm really hoping that in the next season, when there aren't any new spinoff shows for everyone to have extra needing to put their mind in other places, that maybe Arrow will start getting some of that attention back, because wow, that just, the fact that it's really just a payoff of a gimmick really bothers me.
Yeah, same. Because, like I said, it's a bold story move. It is. And I can, in some ways, respect that. What I don't respect is everything that has led up to and kind of resulted in the death. Because even aside from all of that, everything that kind of happened in this episode, I was legitimately screaming, going, why do you have the idol? That is the stupidest idea. Why have you got it in a glass case in the middle of the Arrow Cave? What is it doing there? What are you doing? That is inviting trouble. Take it. Do your thing where you take a piece of it off so that even if someone does manage to find it again, they can't use it because it's missing a piece. And, I don't know, launch one part of it into the deepest part of the ocean and let it sink all the way down and whatever happens there. And launch the other bit into space. What do you do?
Give it to Barry and have him run it to the farthest areas of the world. Like, or just keep it broken and throw it into the bay. Like, they would never get all those pieces.
No. Like I said, drop it into... So it's stupid. Then, if you've got something that's that big a secret that you've taken a piece of the idol off, and that's why it's not going to work, even if Damien Dark gets the idol back, and if only two people are aware of the fact that this happened, Oliver and Diggle, don't let anyone else into the secret. I don't care that it's your brother. I don't care about anything else. If it is something that big, just don't tell anyone. That way, if it so happens that someone else finds out about it, it's down to two people who could have leaked that information. So it was just a series of really stupid mistakes at this point of this team and of everything that's been happening. They should know better. They should know better. They've seen this scenario play out a million times before. And as we have seen from the flashbacks, Oliver is aware of how the idol and stuff works. He is aware of what goes on with this. So why is he messing around with something that dangerous that's going to put people legitimately at risk and ended up in the death of someone? Because they didn't do the responsible thing. Like, it's, for me, it was kind of really slapdash storytelling. And the amount of fake-outs in this episode for who is, who isn't dying was, like, it gave me whiplash. I was like, oh, no, it's going to be one of those episodes.
Well, I think the slapdash storytelling is a result of them not knowing who was going to be in the grave until way too late. Like, if they had planned it out from the beginning and said, we need a shakeup, we need to kill a main team member, we've decided that needs to be Laurel, they could have done something with that and kind of teased it out so it wasn't so lazy when you actually get to the episode.
I don't know. I was really frustrated. Not to say that I don't think that from this point until the end of the season, the payoff from those episodes, the emotional payoff from these episodes, if it's going to be as devastating as they're telling us it's going to be, good. It should be. People should be utterly destroyed by this because it's such a huge death and it has such a huge impact on everyone. And if I didn't see huge amounts of grief from everyone, I would be incredibly worried. But I don't know.
And I guess we'll just say that it sounds like Sarah will find out in Legends, because Paul Blackthorne filmed a bit with the Legends finale for this. So it sounds like Sarah won't be back in any way, and she'll find out, I guess, when they return to their own time at the end of the season for Legends.
Yeah, which that's going to be painful.
Ugh, that's going to be really rough, because Laurel went to all that effort to bring Sarah back, and then Sarah's going to come back and find Laurel gone.
Yeah. Apparently in this next episode we're going to find out a little bit more about, or they're going to discuss at least the potential of passing the mantle on to someone else, and they said that that question will be answered in the next episode.
I have to imagine they won't.
No. Not this soon. I think they might set up something, like a thread for who could take it up eventually. But I don't think that they would, I don't know, they basically gave a big bitch slap to the fans with Laurel's deathbed scene, so I don't know, they might do it.
I mean, I feel like the only way that it's acceptable is for Sarah to come back and for her to reclaim that place, but she's got her role on Legends, and Legends got renewed, so I know Legends is a shorter season, so she could be on Arrow for a little while, but she's gonna go off again, so.
I wouldn't want it to pass on to someone that soon, but I don't, it's gonna be really complicated on their part, because obviously they're gonna have Laurel, who will have died. But they're also going to have the fact that the Black Canary is going to have mysteriously disappeared. So I wonder if they might stage someone dressed as the Black Canary so that people don't make that connection.
The paparazzi photos, I guess, to spoiler, there were paparazzi photos that spoiled that it was Laurel who died, because they found Arrow filming in a cemetery and they saw the tombstone. And for some reason, the tombstone for Laurel says the Black Canary on it.
Well, that's just stupid.
Right?
Because then that jeopardizes stuff with Quentin. Does it not?
Like, Damian Dark says in the episode, like, I made the jump from this person to this person to this person to Oliver Queen. It wasn't hard. So you put, well, Laurel was the Black Canary. Well, oh, I can start filling everything in now.
Yeah. You have one puzzle piece that's a definite piece, and you have all of the others there. You just need the one that makes it easy to connect everything else together. And that is the one. Like, it's, yeah, it's really not going to be difficult for people to connect that all together. But, I don't know.
So that was a thing that I saw and was not happy about. But yeah, so Laurel's dead, and it sucks, and we're gonna have to see where it goes forward. And I get the feeling that this is gonna kind of bring the original Team Arrow back together, which I hope, because I feel like once that trio started gelling in the first season, once Felicity gets brought in, Oliver Diggle and Felicity is really what made the show start working, in that core team. And then they've really, like, fractured it so far that they have made it so it takes something like a character's major as Laurel dying to, like, bring them back together, which I think is problematic in its own right. But my hope is that we then start seeing that trio back together, because they are the core of what made Arrow work, and losing them bit by bit has really damaged the show in the last couple seasons.
Yeah, it really has. And like you said, I'm not opposed to Felicity and Oliver as a couple, but I think that really did change the dynamics quite dramatically as well. So I'm still not convinced that that is a relationship they should go back to either. Not immediately.
I don't think it would be immediate.
No, I don't think so either. I think they've still got major communication issues that they still need to work through.
Yeah, and on both ends, like, Diggle has this really harsh moment where he tells Oliver, like, what was it that, you know, you can't communicate, basically, and that's why Felicity left you. And I was like, well, you're not wrong.
No. And that's not to say that in a lot of respects, Felicity's innocent.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I just think they both have issues. And I can see them, if you start bringing that trio back together, them earning each other's trust again, and then a season from now, trying it again.
Yeah. But this is going to change the show massively.
Which was the point, but again, it's less Laurel's death and more the way that they got to it and how it was not an original plan.
Yeah.
They were just like, well, we have to kill somebody. Here are our options. What's going to be the benefit of killing these ones? Okay, let's go with Laurel. Like, that's bad planning.
Really bad planning.
And it makes me not trust them and the story that they're telling if it doesn't feel like they have an end game for the story. But yeah, so that was Arrow.
Yeah, it was.
Let's talk about Legends.
Okay.
And just keeping on the theme of the worst and Rip Hunter, because Rip Hunter remains terrible. I don't know why they keep trying to tell us he's good at, like, he's competent, because every episode he does something and proves himself even more incompetent. In this episode, they go to the future to target the future version of baby Hitler, and Rip's like, we're gonna kill him, and then they're like, well, killing him isn't gonna do anything to the time stream, and Rip still wants to kill him anyway. And then they end up not killing him and giving him back. And it just accelerates the whole Vandal's rise to power. Like, you are terrible, Rip Hunter. You are the worst at your job ever.
It was just so frustrating. And it just kind of, because when we get to the point as well where Mick is basically like, well, we're all dead anyway, because the Time Masters are just going to send more people to wipe us out. Like, they're not going to stop. That's not something that's going to stop. They don't want us to keep doing this, and they're now going to do anything in their power to really stop it. And it makes me wonder, like, with as many mistakes as they're making throughout time, and they're really, I say they, I mean, obviously everyone else is Rip's mercy in respect to what he knows about the timelines and how it works and what's going to impact things. Like, the huge thing is that maybe the Time Masters aren't wrong. I don't know if we're supposed to think that at this point what Rip is doing is right, because at every point in time he's made things worse. He's, like you said, accelerated the Vandal's rise to power. Like, he brought it forward 5 years. So 5 years of a semblance of peace that people may have been able to go through is lost. Like, that's now obliterated. Like, just all through time, it's just damaging society more and more and more and more. And at this point, I'm not sure if we're supposed to think that what Rip is trying to do is right or not. And whether or not what the Time Masters are trying to do in stopping them is actually for the better of people. Because obviously the Time Masters have to operate out of, like, a fixed point in time, I would imagine, somewhere. They had to have, like, been established at some fixed point. Which means that Vandal Savage and this whole kind of massacre and his, like, kind of dictatorship, I suppose, must occur at, like, a very fixed point. So why is he trying? I know why he's trying to reverse it. He wants his wife and son back. But at this point, what he's doing is he's legitimately damaging all of space and time to save two people. Could he not have worked with the Time Masters in a better way in order to stop Vandal Savage from that point afterwards? Like, it's making me just, like, it's like my head is just going, this is not making sense anymore. Because it's just getting worse and worse and worse and worse.
Well, I feel like in this episode, we're, at least I saw Rip as being increasingly selfish, because the moment we hear that removing the kid from the time stream isn't going to change anything, so killing him isn't going to make any difference, and neither is dropping him in the Stone Age. But Rip still takes him to a remote location to kill him, and that's completely about his family. So he has gotten increasingly more selfish, and that is really damaging to everything that they're doing. And I'm not sure if the show is wanting us to see it that way, but that is definitely how I'm seeing it, and I do not trust him as a leader anymore.
No, me either. I really don't, because I'm just thinking, it's just, everything's going from bad to worse. You're not getting any closer to stopping Vandal Savage. In fact, you're moving further and further through time, closer to the point where your wife and child die. Like, it just makes me think that all of these points when, like, they're trying to find Vandal Savage, much like with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's fixed. So they can't change what's already happened. But could they do something to stop him from that fixed point? Like, where his wife and child die? Like, things that they're not aware of coming up after that point.
Yeah, I don't know. Rip's really incompetent, basically. Speaking of things that are not working on this show, which is kind of sad because I feel like this episode was pretty decent, but
yeah,
the Kendra Ray stuff continues just to not work. For some reason, Kendra does not get involved in any of this plot. She sits around in her room and has flashbacks to a previous life with Carter, so Carter was back for this, for the flashbacks.
That actually kind of shocked me. We got a flashback and I was like, oh no, Carter, no, no.
Danya's anti-Carter feelings return.
But he's, he's just like the embodiment of toxic masculinity.
And we didn't learn anything from these flashbacks that we didn't already know. Like, we know that Aldous learned about his parents' story when he was like 10 or something, because he told us that when we met him. Like, there's literally nothing we get from these flashbacks that is new. So what is the point? All we're setting up is that Kendra feels like she's cheating on Carter with Ray, which I kind of understand based on having 206 previous lifetimes of falling in love with him. But did we need those flashbacks to get that? I don't think so. And I feel like this whole story is just way too schmaltzy and sentimental when, like, the rest of the episode was like, are we going to murder a child? And then this is like, and then there's Ray and Kendra. It just, tonally, it doesn't fit for me. And I feel like on paper, this could be an interesting story, Kendra dealing with her feelings for another man versus her loyalty to Carter as her past lives come back to her, but it just, in practice, is not working. And I find it really takes me out of the episode each time, because the tone, it's a tonal shift every time.
Yeah. And the thing is that obviously them being stuck in the past together for so long has established for them, at least, the fact that they are in a serious relationship, serious enough that Rey was going to propose to her. So at the point that they're at in their actual relationship with each other, it's pretty serious, but we don't get that. We can understand that that's what the show is telling us, but that emotional connection isn't there because it's just everything has happened so quickly for us. And it just doesn't fit. It doesn't feel right. And it is an interesting thing to be playing with. I'm not enjoying it. And I wish I was, because I really am enjoying Rey as a character. I'm really enjoying Kendra as a character. And maybe a tentative exploration of that relationship, rather than them having sped it up to this point. Like, it could have worked as a, you know, her kind of exploring this, I think I feel attraction for him, and doing something very casual and moving it from there, rather than jumping straight into, like, I love yous almost immediately. Like, there was a more organic way that they could have dealt with this. And in fact, if it had been a really sort of casual kind of relationship where she just explores, I guess, her own connection to other people in that respect outside of Carter, without it being about love, that would have fit in with the show slightly more as well, tonally, for me.
Yeah, I agree. I think partially my own shipper goggles are clouding this, because I am totally in love with what they're doing with Sarah and Leonard. And I feel like that is an organic relationship that is developing. I don't know if it's ever going to go anywhere, but the fact that Leonard in this episode mentions something about, like, feelings for you.
That moment.
What I love about that scene, though, is because Sarah goes to talk to him about Mick, but the whole conversation is about, like, what you're saying and what means, the fact that you're talking about this means you're obviously not over it, you're still thinking about it. So the fact that he then brings up, like, completely unprompted feelings for you, like, obviously means there's something there.
Yeah.
And I just sort of love that. And apparently a lot of that originally was just between the actors, Wentworth Miller and Katie Lotz, that they were, like, just having a conversation and they're like, no, we're going to play cards when we do this or something. So apparently a lot of that is to do with those two actors, and they're starting to write to it more. And I feel like that both tonally is fitting the show, because those two characters have a lot of jagged edges to them, but jagged in a way that they sort of slot together nicely. And then also is just slow and organic, and is just two characters who have a lot of things in common kind of gravitating to each other. That feels organic and totally works for the show, which is totally opposite of Kendra and Rey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I mean, we've spoken about Leonard and Sarah before and how much we're really enjoying that relationship, but I think this is the thing, is that I don't think what they're exploring with Kendra and Rey is a bad thing. I just think that it could have used a little bit of tweaking and editing to make it just right.
Yeah, it feels out of place with the rest of the show, tonally, and how quickly it's moved. So, on paper, I am intrigued by it, but in practice, every time we hit one of their scenes, I kind of go, ugh, and I'm not invested, which is too bad, but we'll see. I guess my last question for this is just, at the very end of the episode, Leonard finally does go see Mick, and basically is like, if you kill me, you can go. And Mick beats the crap out of him and then doesn't kill him, and says it's not going to matter because the Time Masters are sending people to kill us all. So is there an indication that they can save him? Because we see several conversations with Mick, and I feel like this episode was paralleling the kid with Mick and people's kind of reactions to whether they want to save Mick or not reflect how they react to whether they should kill the kid or not, which I thought was kind of an interesting thing. And we saw that despite the efforts of the team, that the kid goes and murders his father at the end of the episode. So is Mick going to be down the same road, or can they actually do something to save him?
What does saving him mean?
That's a good question.
Does he need to be saved? Was there anything to save? I mean, Mick is a very particular kind of person. He's... And I think we'll probably see more when we get the little flashback as well, but Mick has always been pretty honest about what he wants. I don't necessarily know that there's anything to save. What we're seeing of him isn't really inconsistent from who he was prior to becoming Kronos, so I don't know what this conversation of being able to save him actually means, because they seem to think that they can make Mick into someone he's not. And I think Mick is very self-aware in respect to where he's come from and where he wants to be. So, yeah, I don't know necessarily that there is anything to save. And not because he's, like, unsavable to the point that, like, they wouldn't be able to. I just mean in the respect that there is nothing to save. That's just who Mick is.
Yeah, he hasn't changed that much in terms of personality. He's maybe gruffer than he was, maybe a little more determined in his nastiness, but that was always... He's just been amplified. He hasn't been changed in personality. Yeah, it's interesting, because I do feel like there was a very purposeful parallel, because we had multiple characters. We had three different characters go talk to Mick in this episode. We had Rip talk to him, Sarah talk to him, and Leonard talk to him, which are three people who deal with how they're going to deal with the kid. So, I don't know. I feel like the show wants us to think there is something to redeem, which is odd because he was never, like, a good guy to begin with. I guess maybe the team is hoping that he'll kind of pull a Leonard and start showing some heroic tendencies, but that's just not his character.
It's not, and it would feel weird. It would feel really weird to see him go big damn hero. I mean, he's kind of like the Jane character in some respects, but, like, from Firefly.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing as we had Jewel State on this episode, I figured, what better time to make a Firefly reference than right now? Like, Jane isn't necessarily heroic in Firefly. Even the episode that legitimately focuses on him being a hero is accidental in that he was doing something for his own gain and basically accidentally saved a town.
In the man person. Called Jane.
The hero of Kent. Sorry. I freaking love that episode, though, so much. I love Firefly a lot. But it's a similar sort of thing in respect to who Jane is as a character, is that he's not necessarily a hero in that group of people, but he still works with them. I don't know, I just... There's a place for him in the team, I think, like there was a place for Jane in Firefly, but I don't think that there's anything to save. There's nothing to redeem. He doesn't want to be redeemed. There isn't anything that he's done that's inconsistent that needs to be redeemed. So I don't know where the show is going with it.
Yeah, because Sarah draws parallels between herself and Mick, which I don't think works because she has different expectations for herself and she doesn't feel good enough about herself, and that's why she thinks she needs to be redeemed, whereas Mick is just like, this is who I am. So I'm not sure where they're going with it. I have a feeling he's getting pulled back into the team just to save his own skin with these assassins that are being sent out. We know we're going to see some flashback or like some them going to see the characters in younger years. I know at least with Sarah, we're going to see an assassin coming after her when before the ship, before the Queen's Gambit and everything, which will be interesting. But yeah, it's interesting. I did enjoy this episode, though, for the most part. There were some interesting things. I wish Jewel State had been in it more.
Yeah, same. I mean, I always want more of her. I wanted them to take her with them and just be like, hey, cool, we're adopting you now. You get to go on space adventures with us because... And she's, like, a smart science-y person, so she'd have helped with the ship.
Cause... Come here, mechanic Kaylee.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, next week is the Old West episode with Jonah Hex. And yes! I'm so excited.
I'm so excited for that. Because, again, Old West meets, like, space stuff. Hell yeah. I mean, I loved Firefly, so...
So this should be fun, and yeah. The guy playing Jonah Hex looks so good.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about that a little bit last week. It's uncanny.
And now we've seen the promo, and him in action looks really good, so yeah, I'm very excited about it. But yeah, I guess that wraps up TV.
Yes, it does. So, movie news, which, not a massive amount, and... nothing groundbreaking necessarily. If you don't want to hear anything about Civil War at all, tune out for like about 30 seconds because, yeah. So 30 seconds from about now. Okay, so early reviews, because the embargo on social media for press was lifted yesterday. People are going insane about it. They said it's spectacular, it's their favourite Marvel movie, people are in love with Tom Holland as Spider-Man, apparently Black Panther is great, so it sounds promising for now. So it's
happy
still
to
a
hear
little...
it.
Yeah, me too. There's still a little... Yeah, there's still a little way to go, but I'm excited to see it. So it's good to know that people are responding positively.
And it's worth noting that the original things we heard about Batman v Superman were positive, but those were fan reviews, and these are critic reviews that are all positive. And the critic reviews for Batman v Superman were terrible.
Though that also said, the critic reviews for Age of Ultron were pretty great as well.
Were they?
I shouldn't. Yeah.
Oh, I
initially,
don't remember that.
The initial like hype before the movie came out was like everyone being like, "Oh my god, this is amazing!" Blah, 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 blah. And I was like, "Oh, okay, fine," and getting really excited about going. And then I was so disappointed. I don't think that's going to happen here because obviously different writers, different team working on it, so on. But yeah, it's coming. It's coming. The countdown is going. I think we're getting an extra like TV spot kind of thing. It's either during the week or on the weekend, like at the MTV Movie Awards or something, but yeah, we're in full hype mode all the way there. Full reviews, the embargo lifts soon. I think it's Tuesday. Full reviews, embargoes lift by Tuesday. So guys, if you are looking to avoid spoilers, be careful, because Marvel have lifted the embargo super, super early. Shows that they're really confident in the film, but also it's going to be hard to avoid spoilers in some respects, or at least some kind of expectation given to you going in. So just tread carefully. Some fans are going to be seeing early screenings. They put up for the 14th, basically the like See It First website that allows you to get into fan screenings super early. There's one of those happening on the 14th. So just be careful out there on the web if you don't want to be spoiled, and we can make it. We can get through it together. We can do it. I guess the other thing that we got from Marvel, Benedict Cumberbatch is going to debut the first Doctor Strange trailer next week. So it is Marvel week on the... Is it the Jimmy Kimmel Show? It's Jimmy Kimmel Show, isn't it? Yeah. On the Jimmy Kimmel Show, basically we're getting, like, Doctor Strange. We're getting
Team Everything's Cat, going Iron to Man. Jimmy Kimmel lately.
I know. Really weird. But anyway, we're getting the first trailer next week. So watch this space. We'll probably talk about it on the next episode, so...
Yep, and just briefly on the DC side, Wonder Woman, the movie, has been pushed up, not back, forward, about 3 weeks. So it's going from June 23rd, 2017, to June 2nd. So that's kind of exciting. We'll get to see it 3 weeks early, so yay Wonder Woman.
Woo! I'm excited, so. Ah, right. That's it for news. Like I said, pretty light, but obviously next week we'll have some trailers to talk about, so I guess watch the space. We'll have more to discuss. I will probably let Caitlin lead the Doctor Strange bit to stop me from going completely crazy. Anyway, feedback. Let's get into that. So Ali left us some feedback and said... Donya, you still not being over my Steve Bucky review just made my day delightful.
Yeah. We love when people find things delightful.
Yeah.
And our delightful shows are back next. Well, one of them is back next week.
Yes, so. Come back to me, Sunshine Twins.
I rewatched the Flash Supergirl crossover with my mother, and I was just like, this is so still delightful. No matter how many times I watch it, it just remains delightful. Matthew said, Lincoln said inhuman powers are based on what the world needs. If that's true, then what need is there for Lash?
Yeah, and this is the comment that I was just... that was the comment I was talking about. Kim says, so it looks like the Unward is going for the Matrix.
Yeah, with the turtleneck and the long trench coat.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I actually kind of... Do you know, I actually am really enjoying what Brett Dalton is doing with, like, this role.
I am now too.
That he's become Hive, it's... Like, I'm so, absolutely fascinated with what he's doing. Like... Obviously, it's so hard to play another person when you look exactly the same, but he's had to change his entire personality when he's still so intrinsically linked with that character he was before, and I buy it. I buy so much that it's a completely different person.
Hashtag acting.
Yeah. Like, kudos, because... It's insane. It's so compelling just watching him on screen now. It's like that morbid curiosity kind of thing where you can't look away from it. So.
Yeah, I'm so fascinated by the whole soft-spokenness of Hive. Yeah. And I really enjoy what he's doing with it, too. I like it a lot.
Same.
Cassie said, catching up on episode 43 of Hero Hype, I know who Harry Dresden is, Danya. Always makes me happy to see other fans of the Dresden Files.
Yay! I actually, after I made that joke, I've had a couple of people, reply to me on Twitter being like, I know who Harry Dresden is, I know what the Dresden Files is. So apparently I made that joke for more than one person. So I'm glad, actually, the Dresden Files is one of my favourite book series, so... And I love Harry Dresden a lot. It took me a while to get into the TV show because it's so different from the books, but I did kind of enjoy the TV show for what it was, and obviously Blackthorne plays Harry Dresden in the TV show, so... Yes. So glad that there's more of you. Cassie also said, oh God, just watched last night's Arrow. Someone please hold me. Why didn't Ollie hug Lance? Good question.
Probably because Lance wouldn't have wanted it, I'm guessing.
Maybe. I don't know. It just... There was a distinct lack of hugging, except between, like, was it Felicity and Diggle?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Felicity also hugged Oliver before Laurel died.
Yeah. More hugging, though. That's like...
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, that's it for feedback. So, question of the week. Unfortunately, we did not get any answers to our question of the week from last week, which was, what would you want your alternate universe self to be on another Earth? But we do have a brand new question for you this week. And, Caitlin, take it away.
So, in honor of the age-old ethical question raised by Legends of Tomorrow, would you kill a future dictator? Or as the question we like goes, you know, would you kill baby Hitler?
Yeah. So let us know. Hit us up on Twitter, which is at Hero Hype Podcast. Leave a comment on this post when it goes up on Hypeable.com, or send us an email, which is HeroHypePodcast@gmail.com. Or, again, if you feel incredibly generous and want to outdo that wonderful Steve Bucky iTunes review in some way, please do rate and leave a review for us on iTunes. Not mandatory, but if you would like to do it, that would be really nice.
It helps other people find us.
Yes, it does. But I guess that's it for another week. So thank you for listening, guys. And I'm Danya.
And I'm sick, Caitlin.
No, it's sick, Caitlin, that I want to reach through the hug. But yes, thanks again for listening, guys. And we'll see you on the next episode. Bye.
Bye.